And now, Screwed Up Sound Effects Theater.
Say it again.
And now, here is Screwed Up Sound Effects Theater.
The name Spokowski, Detective Mel Spokowski. I was sitting in my office one night when I received an important visitor. Someone's at the door. Come in.
Hiya, Spokowski.
What, were you born in a barn? Shut the door behind you.
All right. There, you satisfied?
What can I do for you?
Mind if I smoke?
All right. What did you want to see me about?
Mind if I pull up a chair?
Be my guest. Now come to the point. What did you want to see me about?
I understand my wife has hired you to snoop on me.
What proof do you have of that?
This piece of paper here.
That piece of paper doesn't prove anything.
Well, then what about this photo?
Where'd you get that?
Never mind, but it's all the proof I need to put you on permanent vacation.
Oh no, a gun! Don't shoot!
Eat lead, Spokowski!
Join us again next time on Screwed Up Sound Effects Theater.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous.
See, you're on.
Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Yeehaw! Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
Hey, Lisa, how's it going? It's Pat. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You okay?
Oh, I'm feeling so good, Lisa.
You sound happy.
I am happy because last night I won an argument with my wife in this really great dream that I had.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say she let you think you won the argument.
Man, in this dream, man, I was cooking. Rebuttal I slammed right back like a great ping pong player or pickleball enthusiast.
Nice dream.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, another thing I was thinking about. I just had a big old steak, and we're recording this morning about 10 a.m. I just had a great big steak.
You had a big old steak this morning?
Yeah, I usually have one right before we do the podcast. Big old, real rare. You know, I feel red meat is not bad for you, Lisa.
Yeah.
Now, green meat with fuzz on it. Now, that's bad for you.
Steer clear of that, for sure.
No, I'm just full of, another meat, bologna today.
Yeah, you definitely are. There's an energy about you I normally don't... Not that you're not energetic, but there's something, like I'd almost assume that it wasn't steak you had for breakfast, but maybe something else, if you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. I am on fire, though, today. I'm
really?
No, literally, I'm on fire. Hang on.
Okay. I'm already exhausted.
Yeah. Speed, the official drug of Peculiar Podcast.
Yes,
no, I'm just being a wiseacre. We better get into this because there is a sad list of very significantly significant people that have departed.
Yeah, they're it's been a rough week.
They're not significantly departed. They're totally departed.
Yeah,
and in no particular order. Let's start with maybe the most recent passing as we record this. Gloria Steinem. Mm.
We've marched for every other movement that exists, and we worked for, you know, everything else except ourselves. And now to see women supporting other women and standing up for their own rights is really very, very moving and gratifying.
92 years old. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought she was around my age, but which is 91, but she's 92. Probably one of those people you don't really have to say too much about to explain who they were. pretty well-known world figure, really, for female equality and self-worth.
We had to have an internal physical exam, which they told us was a requirement of the food servers in New York State.
When she grew up in the Midwest, her dream was to be a rockette. You know, one of those dancers, Radio City Music Hall. Somewhere along the way, she almost dropped out of school in the fifth grade, I read. But then she just began reading a lot, and she became somewhat self-educated. At some point then, she regained going to school again in college and all of that. But that's when she kind of became enlightened about the female situation. And she led protests, she wrote essays, she gave speeches.
I would have had a profoundly different life if I had been responsible for rearing a child. I had had an abortion in England. It allowed me to live my own life, not to marry someone for whom I would have been the wrong wife and he would have been the wrong husband.
She helped build women's shelters and rape crisis centers. Hard to believe a lot these kind of things didn't really exist before people like her came along. Not very long ago.
I came of age in the 70s. And she was a big part of shaping the young woman that I became. My mother was very much a staunch supporter of women's rights. And it's incredible to have had somebody like her in the 70s. I think one of the most remarkable things, too, was how she had gone undercover as a Playboy bunny back in the 60s. Yeah. I was just a little teeny baby, but she sort of this whole expose about what it was like to be objectified and all the things that these women had gone through. So her voice still strong to the end.
And I began to see what, of course, the radical feminists were saying in the first place, which was that, you know, it is a caste problem and that women are an oppressed group. And then finally I understood that even though I was not married living in the suburbs, you know, that it was a problem that that affected absolutely every woman.
Did a lot of speaking and, yeah, hard to, but boy, she paved the way for,
yeah,
for a
she
lot
did.
Of us.
And never had a child, and somebody asked her about it, and she said, I didn't prefer to have a child. I don't begrudge people that do, but if you're expected or even required to have a child, then it's no longer a choice.
Exactly. And that was kind of the cornerstone of her whole movement, too, is that reproductive choice is a choice. And that's it. And it's so interesting. No, nobody ever asks men, why didn't you have kids? Nobody ever asks that, because it seems to be sort of a duty or expectation of us. And that's, again, why it was very important. I was very lucky to grow up in the 70s when all this was, and by the way, women couldn't even have credit cards in the 70s, just so people are aware of that. We've come a long way, baby.
I'm actually in favor of reversing that.
I'll bet you are.
Based on Mrs. Cashman. But Gloria Steinem, I was a big fan of the Dick Cavett show when he had a late night show.
Oh, yeah.
And she was a frequent guest, so that's how I really was introduced to her. Just a remarkable person who stayed on course her entire life. Sometimes people drift into some cause or something, and then they lose focus, or I'm tired of that now. I think I'll go do something else. But her focus on female equality was her deal from beginning to end, and she was pretty great.
So then how would you want people to be talking about you, remembering you? What would you want people to say about you, both who didn't know you and did know you?
Mm. Well, there was this person who tried to make the world a little more equal, compassionate, joyful, funny than it was when I showed up.
Gloria Steinem, 92. Then a jazz singer that you may have heard of or not, Cassandra Wilson, 70 years old. She was a blues singer as much as anything. Grew up in Mississippi, opened for Miles Davis and toured with Wynton Marsalis, but I always loved her voice because it was low and it was smoky.
Someday my prince will come. Someday I'll find my love.
But she didn't want to be pigeonholed as just a jazz singer. She did covers of Van Morrison, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, and did a song called New Moon Daughter. And that was her own interpretation of the Monkees song, Last Train to Clarksville. In her interpretation of it, the singer is on the last train to Clarksville because he's about to be drafted into the Vietnam War. So she makes the song kind of an anti-war tune.
And I'll meet you at the station. You can be here by 4:30 cause I made a reservation. Don't be slow.
Cassandra Wilson, 70 years old.
Oh, no, no, no.
Then a guy who was in your profession and mine to an extent, yeah. Peter Cullen,
yeah.
A voice actor, 85 years old. Did lots of voices for cartoons and various things.
Honey! Olaf! Have you sighted land yet, Lucky Eddie?
Those who tried to harm you are called Decepticons.
Stop talking! Tighten your shock absorbers and get in!
No way! The temperature keeps climbing too fast outside. They'll be fine, at least till the ice melts.
The announcer on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour,
yes.
Back in the day, and
yeah.
Sonny and Cher's Comedy Hour. But he's probably best known as the voice of Optimus Prime in the Transformer movies.
I was one of many guys that read for the part of Optimus Prime, and I had no idea, you know, what it was all about. It was a truck that talked.
Before time began, there was the Cube. I am Optimus Prime.
You want me to say Autobots?
Autobots Recon.
Yeah, and keep it like a little bit quieter.
I have witnessed their capacity for courage. And though we are worlds apart, like us, there's more to them than meets the eye.
Yes, very talented voice actor.
Yeah, and he also played Eeyore in the Winnie the Pooh cartoon.
Good morning, Pooh Bear.
If it is a good morning, which I doubt.
However, yeah, now.
Did I get your tail back on properly, Eeyore?
No matter. Most likely lose it again anyway.
Peter Cullen, 85. Then, I don't know if you know who this woman is, Lisa, J.P. Morgan.
I get too hungry for dinner.
Loved J.P. Morgan. Boy, she... Go ahead. But yeah, I know her for one reason and one reason only. But do go on.
Okay, I'll want to know what your reason is, but her name was kind of a takeoff on the famous financier, J.P. Morgan. She made her name J-A-Y-E, and then a P, which really didn't stand for anything, and her last name, Morgan. She has passed at the age of 94. She was hard to categorize as a specific kind of entertainer. She was basically a singer. It had some pretty good hits. One of them hit number 3 on the Billboard charts. 1954, That's All I Want From You.
A little love that slowly grows and grows, not one that comes and goes. That's all I want from you.
By the way, J.P. Morgan died in Longview, Washington, just down the road from us. Most people would remember her, I think. She made appearances on The Tonight Show and Merv Griffin. But she was, later in her career, a panelist regularly on The Gong Show.
I don't know. I can't not laugh at that. Just when you say The Gong Show, it was just wildly off. It was just unhinged. The Gong Show as a whole was unhinged, and she just embraced that whole madness, and
yeah.
She was obviously famous for taking a little too far on The Gong Show, and that was when she took her shirt off.
Yeah, they did tape The Gong Show so that flashing her breasts segment did not air, but they did fire her from the show for that. Now they'd probably have given her a raise nowadays.
No, that would have been known as a viral moment in today's world.
J.P. Morgan, 94. Then a really great actor, Tim Curry, died at the age of 80. Just hard to pigeonhole him, too, except if you were looking for an oddball or a strange character or a villain, he might be your go-to guy.
We're trying to find out who killed him and where and with what.
There's no need to shout.
I'm not shouting. All right, I am.
Really got famous in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is
kind of a cult classic.
Cult classic, played Frank N. Furter.
Well, you got caught with a flat world. How about that? Such an effort. If we only knew of my plan.
He had a lot of power, Frank. He gave a lot of teenagers permission to be different.
He was also King Arthur in the Monty Python Spamalot stage production. A really, real weird character. He was in a movie called Legend.
Aren't you going to say hello?
And he played Pennywise in that Stephen King It miniseries.
Yeah.
See you in your dreams.
Rooster.
Seth.
You're supposed to be in jail.
But they let me out early.
Had a short run as a rock singer, believe it or not. Here's one of his songs.
Birds of a feather fly together. Yes, they do. Yes.
Just a real interesting and unforgettable actor, Tim Curry, 80 years old.
I don't fear death. I try to avoid it. As I think we all do. But I suspect that in the end, I will welcome it.
And then there's one that I didn't have on my list, but you mentioned before we started taping, someone else that passed on, Shelley, how do you say her last name? Shelley?
Fabre?
Shelley Fabre, yeah.
Yeah, and she's the, I believe it's her aunt who's Nanette Fabre, who is an actress back in the day. And
comedic actress,
And then she changed, I think Nanette Fabre changed the spelling of the name because it's a weird, it's fat. It looks, that's why you ask, like, how do you say it? Fabre's or what is it? And so Nanette changed it to the spelling of actual Fabre. But she was one of my favorite actresses back in the day. She was in a lot of sitcoms, like One Day at a Time. She actually started off on the Donna Reed Show.
Gee, I wish he could take just a little bit of time and spend it with us.
Yeah.
You know, I've about given up hope that Dad will ever be able to take me skiing.
But one of my favorite, so she was on also, one of my favorite shows was Coach. And she played alongside Greg T. Nelson. Is that his name?
Craig
Nelson. Yeah. And she was just such a wonderful foil for his blustery sort of conservative type of character, and she was just fantastic. She played a news anchor on that show on Coach, and I loved that show, and she was fantastic, and it earned her a couple Emmy Award nominations too.
I never saw that show, Coach.
Oh, so much fun.
I always thought it was about airline travel or something.
Oh, it feels good to get into fresh clothes. Shall I start a fire?
I just did.
Well, why didn't you let me take over? Johnny
Angel. One part of her career she apparently hated was being asked to record a song. They did that with a lot of teenage stars, Ricky Nelson, Johnny Crawford. But she hated this song, Johnny Angel, and she didn't think she could sing. It was a hit at the time, but it embarrassed her. Later, Karen Carpenter redid the song to maybe a better effect.
Johnny says hello, my heart begins to fly.
And then finally, we have buried the lead for last in the most obvious passing of recent weeks, Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
80 years old.
I got to be pretty famous pretty quick, and I was very excited about that. Before I got that job, though, I had no car, no phone, no nothing. I mean, I've known the pain of that, the joy of that. Tumble out of bed
and I stumble to the kitchen. I can't imagine there's anybody that didn't like her, if not love her. There might be some old cynical...
Well, somebody didn't like her because they just ruined her star of fame on the Walk of Fame. Somebody just vandalized it.
You're kidding. I didn't hear about that.
Just recently, before we got on the podcast, I looked it up. Somebody just completely vandalized it. So
that's why I refuse to let them put my name on this. Because I don't want that vandalism. Hey, before we get to talking about Dolly, that you just reminded me of something. What? I don't know if you remember this. When we were on the radio, the marketing department came to me and said, "Hey, we want to do these bus cards." This was on long ago King Radio, I think. Maybe not. I don't know when it was. Como Radio, maybe.
It was Como.
Yeah, and so the bus cards had me, full body lying out. I'm relaxing on a couch or something like that. And then they were putting them on buses that were driving all around the Puget Sound area. So I remember coming on the radio and making an appeal something like this. I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to start seeing these bus cards driving around, and I know what your impulse is going to be. And I'm begging you, please do not give in to that impulse." I'm talking about the proclivity for some of you to vandalize those bus signs, to take a magic marker, for example, and draw, genitalia coming out of my head, or putting some other obscene word or words on these bus cards. Please, I beg you, do not do that. Right. Again, do not do that. So, of course, I knew exactly what would happen. And I started seeing these bus cards driving around town with that had been defaced, and I felt so proud of it. It's like it was like a call to action that I had given. And
yeah, you did.
You know, and they risked getting in trouble for it, but they did it anyway. So pretty soon these bus cards are all over town, and it was pretty. At some point, it got hard to find one that had not been tampered with.
It's such a weird psychological thing that you used yourself to stick it to the man. I don't know how you did that, but
I don't or why.
I was trying to see if I could find any images online of a defaced, but I'll see if I can find one because it needs to be.
Yeah, go ahead and deface it yourself. I do have a miniature version of that bus card. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. They gave it as kind of a memento from the transit people. So yeah. I'll send a picture of that to you if you remind me, and then you can set about defacing it.
Or no, I think I can find a real one is what I'm saying. I'm okay.
Well, if you can, that'd be great. Anyway, back to Dolly Parton. You know,
just because I'm blonde don't think I'm done, because this dumb blonde ain't nobody's home.
I'm pretty sharp. I'm not educated, and I'm not that intelligent. But I'm smart. I'm country smart. You know how they say somebody's street smart? I feel like I'm, if I've got intelligence, it's just a country smart.
You had said that you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who didn't like her. I mean, I don't disagree with that, but, not everybody's universally liked. Sometimes they're not liked because of how fantastic they are. And right. I think that's the case with her. There's just really so many wonderful things about this woman who is unapologetic about her desire to be girly and sparkly and rhinestones and mm-hmm. nails and hair. Yep, and yep. She just really just really went over the top with it and never apologized for it.
I was so depressed over my weight and a lot of other things until I just finally thought, either get off your fat ass and get on with your life. But out of that, I just had to sit down, take inventory, ask God to help me, lead me out of that. And I thought, this is the best thing in a few months, I really made a comeback, and I got my weight in order, I got my stuff in order, and I really put the rest of my life together.
God made you pretty.
Yeah, he did, but I helped him so. God's willing to help them that's willing to help themselves.
Well, you want to talk about the help?
Sure, I've had lots of work done. I'll have some more done when I need it. I always say if I see something sagging, dragging, and bagging, I'm going to nip it, tuck it, and suck it, whatever it needs to be done.
I think, for example, politicians could learn some lessons from how she handled things, You know, did you, she copped it. Yeah, I've had work done. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm, you know, I can't be like this naturally. I got to get some help, you know, and she, the honesty and the way she could bat away some, what could be a big controversy if she handled it differently and denied that she had, you know, done anything. I think a lot of politicians, if they were, would be forthcoming and honest or able to poke fun at themselves, stick their tongue in their cheek a little bit, I think they would benefit from the Dolly Parton approach. She was also a philanthropist, big time. Didn't hoard her money, keep it in a vault somewhere for herself. She spent it helping out. She built this place called Dollywood, which is a hugely popular amusement park in Nashville, I think it is. She touched so many lives. Her talent was obvious, not just as a singer, which nobody had a voice like that, but as a songwriter as well.
She also created Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, which I just find really important. I know there's a lot of things to care about in this world, but I feel like books and having access to all kinds of books is probably, for me, I feel just extraordinarily important. Yeah. And especially in a time we're living where we're seeing some restrictions in government oversight on book banning and things where we're being told we can't read and things that aren't being allowed in schools. I just love that this was part of what she believed in, her little community imagination library. So I just love that. This was all about getting free books to children.
We didn't have books in the house. Mama had the Bible, and I loved books at school, and I would read everything I get my hands on.
Yeah, and back to her career for just a moment, and I might be wrong about this, but I believe I've read it a couple times. She wrote the song, I Will Always Love You, which she became huge for her, but even bigger for Whitney Houston.
And
the story I heard is that Elvis's manager, Colonel Parker, said, you know, Elvis would love to do that song, but here's the deal. And she's a fledgling songwriter at this point.
Right.
She's not big time Dolly Parton looking for a break. And here's a guy who wants to have arguably one of the biggest performers in the world do her song, Elvis. But the deal is, Elvis's name has got to be on the credits for the writer of the song. So in other words, she was supposed to share credit for writing the song with Elvis, who had nothing to do with writing it, of course.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people would have said, okay, I'll make that deal. And, you know, but she said, no, that's my song. I wrote it. And he's not going to get, I don't have anything against Elvis, but he didn't write the song. It would be fallacious to put his name on there as one of the co-writers of the, and so she would not give Parker permission to use the song and stood by that. And that to me was an early indication of the kind of character and pluck that she had.
Right.
Pretty amazing person. Dolly Parton, she was 80.
You got tiny little hairs and fuzzies all over you.
There's so much static electricity in this room, I pick up everything with boys and money.
How do you want people to remember you 100 years from now?
I want them to say, God, don't she look good for her age?
Let's give it up for Dolly, Miss Dolly Parton!
Okay, so that was quite a list there.
I know.
And
one
I
more
didn't
two.
Include everybody.
Yeah, just super. One more two, which is Hayden Panettiere, who has been in show business since she was a baby. She died at 33.
Yeah,
she was a singer. She was in shows like Nashville. Just kind of had a very troubled life, was sort of mismanaged by her mother in terms of business. And so just a quick shout out to her. I thought she was fantastic in all of the movies she was in. And so Hayden Panettiere.
Another story in the long list of mistreated child actors.
No kidding.
I've been through the ringer, and I'm fiercely, like, people who know me know how fiercely protective I am of the people I love. And the question has been from my friends, like, why are you not as protective of yourself as you are of everybody else?
That's tough to hear. And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't play a bit of this Dolly Parton song, this version especially, that includes strings.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 Jolene.
Hey, I wanted to bring up a guy, and I don't know the full story, so pardon me if I'm doing a bit of this on conjecture, but in Colorado, there is a race for the Colorado gubernatorial position. And the Republican nominee is a man named Victor Marx. He's listed as an author, as a minister. He is 56 years old. He said, or it was written on his website, that he, through various ways, has rescued 45,000 women and children from abuse. 45,000. Yeah.
What a great guy. I mean,
he later recanted that, or at least it was taken off of his website.
He got the number wrong.
The other thing, as a minister, he exorcised demons from people.
Oh, good. Yeah. What a great guy.
That would look good on a business card, wouldn't it? Exorcist, you know, sandwich maker and exorcist.
Yeah.
But he couldn't go everywhere, so he would do some of these exorcisms over the phone.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. I think it might have gone something like this.
Hey there, Willie.
Hi, Mr. Marx.
Is the devil inside you right now?
I think so. Let me check. Yeah, he's there.
Okay. I say, Satan be gone. Is he gone?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
But there's a hamster in there now instead.
Well, I don't do hamsters, Willie.
Okay.
And then it gets even more interesting because he claims, this is disturbing, but he claims that when he was 3 years old, his dad forced him to behead a cat and wear the cat carcass on his head. Then he says, at 7 years old, his dad drove him to a rural Mississippi area and made him shoot and kill a man. Okay?
And he was how old when he shot that man?
7 years old.
Yeah. Just seven a random eight. Guy? Or was this guy, did this guy have it coming to him?
Well, the deal is that the FBI and other legal people have, you know, the law enforcement folks said, we don't have any record. Based on his age now of 56, he must have been, you know, that's almost 50 years ago. No, we don't have any record of any unsolved mystery or anybody that wound up dead that we can't account for. So we have no record of that. So it's unprovable. And that now apparently is something, and he doesn't say so much anymore on the campaign trail. But what I just thought was spectacular is somebody turned me on, pointed me towards this interview that was done with this fellow. Again, his name is Victor Marx. His dad's name, by the way, and I'm not kidding, was Karl Marx. But Victor is asked a question here, and I'm going to play this. You have to see it. It's even better if you look at his face because his eyes are darting around the ceiling. And listen how long it takes for him to answer what ought to be just a simple and immediate reply. Check this out.
Is there a part of your life story that can't be scrutinized, or is it all fair game for people to look at?
It's all fair game.
Okay. Yeah. Your claim that your abusive stepfather forced you to kill a man when you were 7 years old, is that the only person you've ever killed?
Well, I would say as a child, yes. I mean, without question. But I've been in other situations where, you know, possibly people or persons died as a result of me defending myself in other countries. There's no count on that, and there's no photos or, but that was something as a kid, without a doubt. Yeah.
Do you think that you've killed people as an adult?
Does it matter?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Why?
Killing somebody's a pretty weighty thing.
If someone's trying to kill you or you're in combat?
It's still a weighty thing to take somebody else's life. I mean, it could be self-defense, it could be justified, but it's still a weighty thing. So I'm just asking you, how many people have you killed?
Well, if I did, I wouldn't be telling a reporter sitting here in my training center.
How about voters? Would you tell voters?
There's no need. I don't think that's important. It's actually kind of, it's an odd question to me.
It's funny you describe it as an odd question because you actually talk about the idea of killing people with some frequency and why it's a necessary thing to do, killing people. You said on NRA TV in 2017, now a lot of them just got to be killed. I've had them shoot at me and I had to shoot back. There's a time and place to eliminate the enemy and you have to. You said on Jeff Lerner's podcast in 2025, some people have to get killed. Some people have to die. But it's an odd question to ask you how many people you've killed.
Yes.
So as I'm watching that, Lisa, listening to it, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great if we had some kind of microphone or something that we could hear his thoughts at that moment?
Uh-huh.
I think it might go something like this.
Your claim that your abusive stepfather forced you to kill a man when you were 7 years old, is that the only person you've ever killed?
There was Russell and Harry and David and wives 2, 3, and 5, and Frankie, he doesn't count because he's a dog, and the Willoughby twins and the McElby family.
Well, I would say...
And Jerry, he had it coming.
As a child... Yes.
I wouldn't mind knocking off this nosy interviewer, too.
So there he is. Yeah. So there he is, your Republican candidate for governor in Colorado, Victor Marx.
I think the most impressive part about that clip, I can't get enough of it. I watch it over and over.
Oh, it is fantastic.
Is Kyle Clark, who's just a... you know, just a regular old Denver market news anchor. I think every political debate should include this man, Kyle Clark, who is a hero in the way he started the questioning on this.
He's really smooth.
He didn't pull any punches. He just basically repeated everything that had already been declared and just stared at him. And if you look at the actual video, the guy next to him on the panel is looking at Kyle Clark like, my God, man, you are fantastic. Like, just watch the guy sitting next to him as he's questioning.
Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. Hopefully, Lise, maybe we can put a link to the YouTube
we will.
Version. You got to see it, folks. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
You can't just, but it made me laugh out loud because I watch how long it takes him to answer. I mean, nobody does that.
Right.
You know? Not even a, let me think about that or nothing. It's just this long, seems like it goes on for a minute. It's just seconds, but it's wonderfully awkward. I urge you again to see it.
But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry.
Now, you had something that you came across, which I also found very interesting, a obscure movie that probably most people have never heard of. I hadn't. And it's called The Clock?
It is called The Clock. Now, we have to be careful because there's other movies, films out there that are called that. This is a particular film that was produced in, I believe, 2010. So make sure if you're going to look this up, it's the 2010 film called The Clock, and it's sort of billed as the never-ending movie. And the reason this fascinated me is the guy who produced this was what's his name, Christian Marclay, and it's basically a looped 24-hour video that is cut from scenes of film and television that feature clocks.
Does anybody really know what time it is? Does anybody really care?
So the idea is you can tune into this movie if it's running 24 hours a day.
The movie itself 24 hours long?
That's what I just said.
No, you said 24 hours a day.
It's a 24-hour looped video, so it runs 24 hours. But the idea is that you can tune in at any time during the day, and it will be playing the time that you're looking at it. For instance, right now, while I'm talking, it's 10:35 a.m. If I were to tune into this film wherever it's playing, it would have a scene from a movie that shows a clock with this time.
The exact same time that it is, even as you're watching the movie.
Yes.
Think of the work on a project like that.
I know.
It's impossible to imagine how he pulled this off. I don't think you could do it, except that we now have a wonderful technical editing equipment and huge towers of data that we can keep. But to go through all these movies and find, and sometimes somebody is saying the time on this movie clip. Sometimes you see it way in the background of a train station or something like that.
Yeah.
But putting it all together is astonishing. And I read a little about him before he did that. He had put a film together of, again, old movies, but people on the telephone.
I love this.
Talking to
so
each other.
Much. Yeah.
And they cut between movies. Somebody'd ask a question on the phone, and then from another movie would come the answer, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Very creative, but enormously ambitious and time consuming. I don't know how he pulled it off.
Well, he started, the concept came to him in 2005, and that's kind of when he started trying to synchronize all this film footage and getting, and he had some help. There was an assistant that helped him just sort of found footage of clocks. And some of these, like you said, aren't really. Like there's one scene, The Night of the Living Dead, that old black and white original film, where there's no clock, but she says it's 3:10. So that's the scene that plays.
If you're wearing your watch when you're watching this film at that time, that's what it'll say on your clock, on your watch.
It's just,
too.
It's just weird. Insane. So,
so obviously this is not a thing that is going to be on Netflix, I wouldn't think, because you have to go to a specific place. It has to start at a specific time.
Right.
And end at that time. So I know there in the recent past, it has played at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, because it really is
It's more of an exhibition than...
Yeah.
I just find it fascinating. So, and some people were talking about how things get really weird after 2 a.m. Like... If you go and see it after 2 a.m., there's some very odd clips that play, but you have to be up at that hour. You can't just see what it is at 10 a.m. You got to be there and watch it at 2 a.m. I just find it fascinating.
It's not to create a trick or to make you forget about time. I want you to be totally conscious about it throughout.
This uncanny experience of watching some of your favorite movies and realizing that it's telling the time that you're living in right now. And it's eliminating that barrier between you and the world on screen.
We used to have a friend and producer of our radio shows named Dustin Hornby. And when I heard about this movie, I thought he would love that.
Oh, he would have loved this.
He loves stuff like that. He had a thing at his parents' house. They lived way up in somewhere in Canada on one of the islands up there. And he invited me and you and a bunch of other people. I don't think you were able to come, but I did.
Able to come.
And he loved these big video discs. Before we had the more compact DVDs, there were these big laser discs. And he had a player, and he would get them from a place called Silver Platters, mostly. And they were entire movies on these huge discs. Back before digital video like that was a real big thing, Dustin was way ahead of everything. He treasured these things. And so he put on kind of a movie weekend. And these movies would play back to back to back to back. And they played even after everybody in the house had gone to bed. I got up, I think, at 2 a.m. and I walked out, and it was in the middle of mad world. And there was Dustin sitting there. Only him. Only him. Nobody else. Everybody else was asleep.
But
he insisted, no, we got to play them through the night. Got it one after the other. It's got to happen this way. Is very important to him, and that's why I think he would love something.
Oh,
like
he would
this.
Have loved this. So yeah, The Clock by Christian Marclay, and again, he's a video artist, and the idea is that at any point when you're watching it, the time shown on the screen is the time that it actually is right now.
Crazy.
I just love it. I love it so much.
Here you're reminded that you have an appointment at a certain time, that you can't spend your whole day watching this thing. You're more than a viewer. You're a participant in a way, because your life infringes on this clock.
He even insists on how people watch it, too. I saw a film of him moving couches around and taking a tape measure out to make sure the couch was this far from the other couch. The screen was this far from the, you know.
Oh, you're talking about Dustin Hormey. I thought you were talking about Christian.
No, I'm
Marclay.
Talking about the guy you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Christian Marclay?
The clock guy.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah. He wants it, like, I guess any artist, he wants it to be watched in
a particular way.
In a particular way, yeah. And a particular attitude. So, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
The effort that it took with Christian and the team of researchers locating the clock footage and all of these different clips is somewhat superhuman.
Okay, well, now, I think it might have been on our previous podcast. We were talking about, or I guess I was talking, about the presidential order of succession. And in a joking way, at the end of it all, I said, and if all of those people disappear, then the new president of the United States will be the mayor of Renton.
Yeah.
And obviously made that up a bit, but one of our listeners, well, I made it up entirely, actually.
I know. Why'd you say I made it up a little bit?
I thought it would soften it a little bit. Sound like I was
you
so
misled,
completely...
You completely misled our audience.
Yeah, I did. But one of our listener, Ty Galvin, a wonderful guy, a dentist in Renton, he said, I enjoyed your recent podcast, especially that part concerning the line of succession. Should the job befall him, he says, the mayor of Renton actually would be an incredible asset. I don't even know who the mayor of Renton is, but... Ty is about to tell us.
Okay.
The mayor is a man named Armando Pavone, and he would be a genius at the job. Armando worked for the police department early on in his career, and then he owned Renton's best Italian restaurant called Armando's. Mm. As well as being our current mayor, he's part owner of Renton's best steakhouse, the Melrose. He deals with crime. He spends taxpayer money responsibly on our beautiful parks, which, by the way, he does not name after himself. And he makes an effort to be inclusive to all of Renton's citizens. He's on the record saying the Renton police will never help ICE or any of its federal agents. He says, that's just the backstory, but there you go.
Yeah.
Thought you would like to know the real story about him.
Love it.
So, nice to know we got some people in higher offices who are doing the right thing.
Right. I'm rooting for him to be the one.
Patty's my wife. We were watching one of the news shows the other day, and they were talking about the war, which is variously not called a war by some of the administration officials.
They downgraded it to a skirmish.
Yeah, skirmish or a tete-a-tete or shoving match.
A misunderstanding, really.
Patty said, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we just TP Iran? We get in there with a few of our commandos and we just with a bunch of toilet paper in their knapsacks and we TP every place there. Not just once, but over a period of time, I think they might actually surrender at some point. Yeah, they say, okay, we can't. And you could try other stuff too. I was thinking, you know, put the sack of burning dog poo on the front porch of the Ayatollah.
Yeah,
and then knock on the door and run away. Or then they could counter as well, so that they maybe sneak a guy in to put Trump's hand in water while he's sleeping, you know, or cellophane over his toilet.
That's a good one.
Or a short sheet Trump's bed, and then Trump can turn around and put a kick me sign on the Ayatollah.
Oh, that would be brilliant. Or, coming back from that. When somebody when somebody puts a kick me sign on the back of you, there's just no coming back from it.
No, you're permanently humiliated. Yes, yeah. There's, exactly. You know, get a bunch of those googly eyes and stick them all over Tehran.
Yes. And
then they could counter by switching the filling of an Oreo with toothpaste. You know, they might try something like that.
That's
brilliant. Or maybe switching out shaving cream for ice cream.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. Or cover an entire car or a door with sticky notes. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think pretty much they'd be waving the white flag. At least one side or the other would.
Yeah. They'd be screaming uncle for days. Yeah.
In a perfect world, they'd both say, okay, enough is enough.
Right.
We're done.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet surrender.
Yeah, I was watching a show called Lioness. I think it's on Prime Video.
Sure. That's got Nicole Kidman and someone else in there. Is it good?
Zoe Saldana.
I kind of not watching it because I'm not a fan of Nicole Kidman or Zoe. But is it good?
I like it. It's really good, and I love Zoe.
Really,
but but I noticed the executive producer of this show. It's just always something you notice in the credits. Executive producer, Tommy Turtle.
Tommy Turtle?
Tommy Turtle, I think.
Is that a real name?
Is that a cartoon character or a real name? It's a real name. I looked him up.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Tommy Turtle. And it started getting me thinking of guys that I knew or know of that have sort of cartoon names, and I never thought of it before.
That's pretty funny.
My classmate in grade school was a kid named Tommy Bear.
That's a good cartoon name.
B-A-E-H-R, but pronounced Bear. Tommy Bear. I know a guy named Daryl Dogs. D-A-U-G-S. The other possibility, Cheryl Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Be a good name for a cartoon character. I know a guy named Jim Wolf. There's Wolf Blitzer. Could be a cartoon character. The hilarious character, Warner Brothers character, John Cougar. Gingrich. The Newt. This is just some of my thoughts on that.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, I think we're already, you could argue we're at the end of this road, Lisa.
I believe we are, sir. Does that mean you have a joke to wrap up the episode? Did you?
I do. And every once in a while, as you know, Lisa, I'm in a quandary where I found two jokes that I think both have merit and could make the cut. And I don't know what to do here.
Well,
whether I can do both of them.
Let me ask you this.
Sometimes you're not that big a fan of me doing two jokes.
I don't like it when you do two. Are you able to use in either one of these jokes, are you able to use? Are you able to use your, I can't get my microphone to work. What the heck? Are you able
yes,
to use
Yes, I know
your
what you're going to say.
I know. Why can't my microphone work?
My magic echo device. Yes, I think I could use that in this joke.
Okay. I think that's what you need to choose.
Okay. I'm choosing a joke now that doesn't require, but will be enhanced by the use of an echo.
Okay. Perfect.
You ready?
Yes.
Here we go. Two little boys, Jimmy and Johnny, are excessively mischievous. They're always getting into trouble. They're always causing chaos at school and around town. And one day, the boy's mother heard that the local preacher in town had been very successful at disciplining difficult kids like Jimmy and Johnny. So she asked the preacher,
"Would you go speak with the boys?"
The preacher agreed, but only if he could see each boy one at a time. So the mother sent Jimmy in the morning, and the preacher was this huge man with a booming voice that almost sounded like an echo. And he sat Jimmy down and he said,
"Do you know where God is, son?"
The boy's mouth dropped open, but no words came out. The preacher repeated even more sternly,
"Where is God?"
The boy made no attempt to answer. The preacher raised
his... Well, no, because he was peeing his pants.
Exactly.
Would you?
Well, yeah. and I'd probably pee other people's pants, too.
No, I mean, would you even say anything? No, you're just standing there peeing your pants.
The kid can't even speak. He's so scared. God. The preacher raises his voice even louder, shaking his finger in the kid's face and bellowing,
"Where is God?"
The boy screamed and bolted from the room. He ran home and he hid away in a closet. Well, when the older brother found him there, he said,
"What happened? What happened?"
And the younger boy said,
We're in big trouble this time. God is missing and they think we did it."
Okay. The punchline was not as funny as the delivery. Just so you know. It was good though.
Thanks.
I feel like you could have stretched out the ending a little longer. I feel like you ended abruptly.
Did I?
Yeah.
How would you have stretched out the
ending? I don't know. Like the kids, he runs home, he's in the closet, his brother comes in and says, "What happened?" And the kid says, I don't know. I'm not good at ending jokes.
How about the kid says the punchline, and then there's an extra punchline that said,
"Yeah,
this is God. Where am I?"
See, that's the ticket right there.
If I should stay, I would only your way, so I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way.
Thanks for listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.